B. Collins.
Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Monday, October 15th, 2018. Facebook's brazen censorship, announced on Thursday, purging some 800 pages and accounts without any notice on an arbitrary, fuzzy standard. It's drawn silence from corporate media, from political leaders, and I believe that signals their approval of these actions. Yes, we're purging fake news, only the accounts involved are generally based in the United States, generally independent media outlets, and many of them lean, like I do, to the left. And as I pointed out on Friday, the New York Times article announcing Facebook's action framed it around a right-wing news site that had published information challenging the polygraph test that Christine Blasey Ford said she had taken. And while I might have disagreed with their point of view, I think that is legitimate First Amendment protected expression. And so, to get some commentary on this, we have to turn to the World Socialist website, where they, I think, are doing a great deal of good work trying to defend the First Amendment rights of many Americans. They note that the anti-media that had 2.1 million followers, the Free Thought Project with 3.1 million followers, and Countercurrent News with 500,000, all of them were not only purged last Thursday, they were on the blacklist that surfaced right after Thanksgiving in November of 2016. It was 2 years ago. And this group that has never been completely identified, they call themselves Prop or Not, short for Propaganda or Not. They compiled a list of organizations based on, again, arbitrary standards that they claimed were part of a sophisticated Russian propaganda campaign. And they urged that those sites be removed so that Americans would not be tempted with their Russian propaganda. Now, Bob Perry, along with Glenn Greenwald and Matt Taibbi at the time, raised holy hell about this, and you probably heard me ranting and raving about it too. As it turned out, I was not on that list, but I could have been. And those who were, not all of them have been purged by Facebook, but the fact that those that were targeted last week all appeared on that blacklist is quite chilling to this American. And the Washington Post, while it did kind of partially retract its publication, that information is still out there. And Prop or Not, again, we don't know who they are, is gloating about these developments. They took to Twitter and said, Russian propaganda is very, very mad about their various front outlets and fellow travelers getting suspended at Facebook and or at Twitter. In a separate post, Prop or Not said, well, look at that. Facebook removed some of the most important gray-black Russian propaganda outlets from their platform. Bravo, Facebook. Better late than never. So a big thank you for this. And then it added, ominously, all of these organizations are cross-platform and have websites, but one thing at a time. That's not even a thinly veiled threat that there will be other actions separate from Facebook or Twitter to try to silence the views that don't conform to the corporate mainstream consensus in this country. And here is my personal standard. Have you ever seen the Palmer Report? I have criticized it many times here on the podcast and on Facebook when I see friends who are duped into sharing it. Bill Palmer is a dedicated political activist for the Democratic establishment. And his daily ravings, sometimes he posts three or four times a day, take one little maybe fact and spin it into clickbait for desperate Democrats. He promotes the Russiagate narrative. He promotes all kinds of loyalty to Hillary Clinton. I believe Bill Palmer came out of David Brock's Correct the Record, Dark Money Super PAC. media management operation. And I'll tell you this, when the Palmer Report is purged from Facebook, I'll know that they have clear standards, standards that are applied to all players regardless of their political perspective and where they fit into the mainstream consensus. And as long as the Palmer Report is still on Facebook, and I checked yesterday, it is. He made 7 or 8 posts in the preceding 24 hours. Well, as long as that's there, I'll know that Facebook standards are based on who is pressuring them. And right now they're trying to prove that they don't block conservatives or treat them unfairly. And one way to do that is to purge lefty websites. Coming back to the comments of Andre Damon at the World Socialist website, quote, last year, the World Socialist website reported that it and other sites, including Global Research, Counterpunch, Consortium News, WikiLeaks, and Truthout, saw their search traffic plunge after search giant Google implemented a change to its search ranking algorithm. Counterpunch punched traffic off 39%. Search traffic to Consortium News down by 51%. And now let's turn to the scrappy outlet Mint Press News. And I've met the publisher, Manar Mohawish. I consider her a very credible reporter and editor. And their coverage noted some of the issues that you already are aware of about the number of accounts that were purged. And let me read to you the notification that, for example, Press for Truth. Now, my friend Kyle Hentz, who's been a longtime activist pushing for the truth about 9/11, he helped produce a documentary called Press for Truth, and I believe that was his page, or related to that group. The notification reads, your page has been unpublished for misleading behavior, such as being administered by a fake account, misleading users, or violating the Facebook spam policies. Note how vague that is. They're not accusing Press for Truth of any specific violation. It's just boilerplate. The notice continues, this goes against the Facebook pages, terms, and Facebook community standards, which help keep our community safe and respectful. If you think we made a mistake, you can appeal, and we'll take another look. Now, there was no warning to Press for Truth about where they may have crossed a line. There was no specific claim about a particular post that may have violated standards. This is collective punishment. And Press for Truth may just be Kyle Hentz. It may be a group of people. I don't really know today. But this is a really dangerous, dangerous set of moves. And the silence of our elected officials, the so-called progressives, is stunning to me at this point. Now, here's an example that I think will chill almost anyone who hears it. Last year, the Free Thought Project was flagged, it was earlier this year, not last year, as fake news when they published a story about Jeff Merkley, the senator from Oregon, being forcibly removed from a Homeland Security migrant detention center in Texas that had once been a Walmart. So Facebook turned to the Associated Press and those fine people at Snopes. We're told to believe Snopes. If they fact-check it, it's, you know, they know the truth. Well, they determined that the post was false because the AP asserted that the article made the claim that Walmart was housing immigrants for Homeland Security. All they said was that Jeff Merkley was removed from a migrant detention center that had once been a Walmart. And that is a fact. So who do you appeal to? Is there a Facebook truth court? Do you get to face your accusers from the Atlantic Council and the Weekly Standard? Those arbiters of truth? Designated by who? By Zuckerberg? Here's more information on the decline in traffic. Anti-media, its traffic dropped from about 150,000 page views per day in early June to 12,000 by the end of that month. And we have some numbers here, let me find it, about Mint Press, because they have seen a stunning decline in referral traffic. So let's see here. Mint Press reported in June that traffic from its social media pages had reached a dramatic low. The site's average traffic of around 70,000 unique visitors last January had dropped to 4,000, a decrease of 94%. And Mint Press, while it has not been molested on Facebook so far, on Thursday, they were targeted by Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, for publishing a cartoon that depicts Israeli snipers targeting journalists in Gaza. Now, that cartoon clearly is a political cartoon protected by the First Amendment. And the incident is based on fact, because there was a Palestinian journalist who was shot and later died by Israeli sniper fire. So we are heading into, again, what is called a truth emergency. And my friends Peter Phillips and Mickey Huff at Project Censored coined that phrase back, I think, in 2008. But the truth is at great risk right now, and our ability to communicate, to share ideas that are not approved by the mainstream, by corporate and political leaders, is at great risk right now. And Facebook has also admitted that over the past few years, they failed to properly manage the operation in Myanmar. And the Burmese military put 700 people into manipulating Facebook and building pages that would attract an audience and then feeding them hateful messages about Islam and about the Muslim Rohingya minority group. This has led to the ethnic cleansing, the forced expulsion of just under a million Rohingya into Bangladesh. And Facebook is so pervasive in Myanmar that people think of Facebook as the entire internet. And Facebook has acknowledged, we were a little slow to notice that and to respond, and we really regret that some of our Facebook friends may have been raped or had their villages burned or been expelled from their native country because of hateful messages on our friend network platform. It is truly very sad. And today, I'm releasing an in-depth interview with Gareth Porter. He published at Consortium News last week. I saw the story widely distributed on Facebook over the weekend by many of my contacts. Gareth Porter raises important questions about what he calls the shaky case made by the New York Times, claiming that Facebook was used by Russians to meddle in the election and to brainwash Americans into voting for Trump. Here's an excerpt from my conversation with Gareth Porter.
That is a spectacular claim, which undoubtedly made millions of Americans shake their head and say, wow, the Russians really were at work there successfully. And that's really the most outrageous thing that Shane and Mazzetti did in this piece, because that idea that 126 million Americans were somehow influenced by Russian the Internet Research Agency in St. Petersburg through their Facebook feeds is absolutely ridiculous and clearly untrue. And so what I did was to go back to what Facebook itself actually testified before Congress. And so what we find out from that is that what the general counsel of Facebook named Colin Stretch, I don't want to comment on that, but we'll let it stand. What he testified was something very different. He said as many as 126 million Americans, quote, may have been served one of these stories.
I invite you to listen to the full interview with Gareth Porter. It'll be released to subscribers later today at peterbcollins.com at TuneIn. Let's see, TuneIn, iTunes, Spreaker, and Stitcher. and wherever else you can find the Peter B. Collins interviews. One of the key points that Gareth Porter makes is that Facebook acknowledges that no matter how many millions of impressions you generate, only about 10% of the items that are posted in an individual's newsfeed are actually read. 1 out of 10 items. Which means that a lot of that alleged Russian propaganda just scrolled right past people, or they scrolled right past it. Every day I pause for a moment to thank the people who support my work here at the podcast with your subscriptions. People like the great actor Joey Perillo, who's still waiting for his Oscar, Wendy Gebauer, Abby McMillan, and Paul Tomaselli. They all kick in a set amount each month, and I invite you to join them. I need your support in these declining times. Yes, my referral traffic from Google and my distribution on Facebook have all dropped sharply. So I got to rely on you to spread the word, to bring new listeners to the podcast, and to help support me. So visit peterbcollins.com, find the menu tab, then click on Become a Subscriber. You'll be on the sign-up page, and in a couple of minutes you can choose the level of support that's comfortable for you. And hey, I understand not everybody likes to use PayPal, and I am seriously considering either dialing back my use of Facebook or leaving altogether. But if you'd like to communicate with me by the U.S. mail, my address is Box 150, 660, San Rafael, California, 94915. So Trump dominated the news over the weekend. On Saturday, he held the photo op with the pastor who was released by Turkey. Then on Sunday, he gave an interview that was broadcast on 60 Minutes. It had been recorded with Leslie Stahl, I believe, on Thursday. And I have to say that Trump is at the top of his game. And the game is demagoguery. Because he bobbed, he weaved, he dodged, he distracted, he denied. And when that failed, he attacked Leslie Stahl or the fake news media, the New York Times, whatever was convenient at the moment. And while Trump has this strange stream of consciousness that always leads back to himself, he managed to make some news. He has this baffling position on climate change. Yeah, I think something's happening. Something's changing. And it'll change back again. I'm not denying climate change, but it could very well go back. Huh? That is simply not even possible. But hey, he creates his own reality, right? He had a reality TV show. Then he denies. He says, I don't think there's a hoax. I do think there's probably a difference, but I don't know that it's man-made, and scientists have their own political agenda. And when pressed, he says, well, you know, I don't want to give trillions and trillions of dollars. I don't want to lose millions and millions of jobs. I don't want to be put at a disadvantage. So he's basically saying that the planet can destruct itself. But as long as we're making money and people have jobs, we will not lift a finger to change that trajectory. And it really, you know, he's very clear about this. What's amazing is that Americans don't rise up and pull out their butane lighters and say, hey, man, this is crazy. And fact checkers point out that meeting the goals of the Paris Climate Accord would save the world tens of trillions of dollars in avoided climate damages. But Trump, of course, can't see beyond the end of the next quarter and the profit and loss statements. And here's a quote from a climate scientist, Andrew Dessler at Texas A&M. At its heart, this is just a wacky conspiracy theory. It's important to realize there's never been a conspiracy by a huge field of science. And this would have to be an extremely massive conspiracy, considering the thousands of scientists working on this. On the other hand, there have been many examples, cigarettes anyone, where political advocates have tried to cast doubt on science that is extremely solid. And that's what is going on here. Over at the Bezos Post, op-ed columnist Greg Sargent captured it pretty well. Let me quote from him. In an interview broadcast Sunday night on CBS, Trump spectacularly outdid himself in revealing all of his very worst qualities in a compressed time period. The relentless lying, the unabashed sympathy with autocrats and dictators, the gloating, misogynist contempt for Christine Blasey Ford and the millions who saw her as an icon, the rabid xenophobia, and the lack of even minimal regret over the cruelest policies birthed by that xenophobia, such as the family separations resulting in thousands of children locked in cages. In doing so, Trump perfectly showcased the Republicans' predicament as they seek to hold the House. They need Trump to go full Trumpist, to get out his voters because his policies aren't getting the job done. Yet these displays are simultaneously strengthening the anti-Trump backlash among the constituencies most likely to deliver the House to Democrats. A little later in his column, he says Trump declared that it doesn't matter whether Christine Ford was telling the truth because we won in getting Kavanaugh confirmed. Pressed by Leslie Stahl on why he had ridiculed her at the rally in Florida, Trump claimed that if he hadn't, they wouldn't have won. And so he successfully fences. He plays this defensive word game where he doesn't acknowledge the question. He responds to the topic in a way that makes sense to him and that fits his deceptive thinking. And so it doesn't matter when he mocked Christine Blasey Ford after calling her credible. And he said if he hadn't given that speech, that his side wouldn't have won. And later on, he signaled his situational ethics when he was challenged about his described love affair with Kim Jong-un. Leslie Stahl reminds him that he is a guy who starves his people, has gulag slave labor, got his half-brother assassinated, public executions. And Trump says, well, you know, the idea that we fell in love is just a figure of speech. And he said, let it be whatever it is to get the job done. So this is a man who has absolutely no sense of consistency when it comes to the truth or positions that he takes. And so, while some of his comments were interesting and different and appeared to show that he has a sense of what's going on, a lot of it was just contradicted by the games that he plays with words. And he believes, and, you know, he is persuading his base. Those Twitter mobs that love him, they believe all the stuff that he says. Trump's doppelganger, Alec Baldwin, who once again played Trump on a Saturday Night Live cold open, was pretty funny. Well, on Sunday, he flew to New Hampshire, where he appeared before a political group. And here's what he said. It was the New Hampshire Democratic Party. The way we implement change in America is through elections. We change governments here, at home, in an orderly and formal way. And in that orderly and formal way and lawful way, we need to overthrow the government of the United States under Donald Trump. That's pretty strong language. I wish it was coming from a Democratic elected official. I wish they were using the word impeachment. Alec Baldwin, the actor, continued, there's a small cadre of people currently in power who are hell-bent on continuing a malicious immigration policy that has set this country up for charges of human rights violations by the global community. This cadre has looted money from the federal treasury and deposited directly into the bank accounts of their most ardent political supporters. Well, that's a pretty strong statement from Alec Baldwin. Now, Trump has been talking recently as he pivoted after the Kavanaugh nomination and declared that Democrats are using mob tactics to try to disrupt our beautiful constitutional system, to deny a perfect, innocent man a seat on the U.S. Supreme Court. And he's really stoked the idea when he holds these mob rallies all across the country that the real mobs we have to fear are Democratic mobs. But get this, Friday night in New York, a Republican group in Manhattan hosted the group called Proud Boys, about 30 of them, who describe themselves as Western chauvinists and have frequently aligned themselves with avowed neo-Nazis, left the event and it appears that some protester flipped off a Make America Great hat from one of the Proud Boys. So they pummeled the protesters. There were three of them. And New York police officers were present at the time of the attack, but none of those Proud Boys were arrested for the beatdown. There was a separate event where three of them were arrested, but not in this one. So, it is stunning to me that Trump can make these claims about mob violence from the left as it plays out from his supporters. There's very little comment. So now to the photo op on Saturday where the Reverend Andrew Brunson just returned from captivity in Turkey. And by the way, he was under house arrest, not in a prison at the time. So he showed up and he was predictably grateful. But get this. He knelt next to Trump and gave a prayer, asking God to give the president supernatural wisdom. Quote, I ask that you give him wisdom to lead this country into righteousness. And immediately after that, Trump said thank you and then said, by the way, can I ask you one question? Who did you vote for? Now, they both promptly coughed up that they had voted for Trump absentee from Turkey, and the reverend said, I sent in an absentee ballot from prison. But this shows how insecure Trump is, his need to show who supports him, and the idea that the pastor's support is what caused God to intervene for his release. And the Christianists, the God Squad, the Bible thumpers, eat this stuff up. I mean, just fundamentally, he disrespected the prayer that the pastor offered because his need for political gossip is what took precedence. And now we take a look at the situation involving the Saudi citizen who had been residing in the United States and writing columns for the Washington Post, Jamal Khashoggi. And it appears that the theories that he turned on his Apple Watch and it recorded audio, if not video, of his interrogation and what is believed to be a brutal murder and dismembering, it appears that that is the source of the evidence that the Turks have been citing. Despite that, the Saudis keep extending their denials. No, no, no. Trump called the King of Saudi Arabia, Salman, today. He spoke to him for 20 minutes. The ruler denied any knowledge of what happened to the journalist. And after the call, Trump served up a new conspiracy theory that rogue killers may have been behind the disappearance. So Trump has sent his Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, dispatched him immediately to Riyadh. And you know what happens? Americans go there and hold hands with the Saudi royal family. Will this get to the bottom of it? We already know that Trump will not use sanctions on military arms sales to Saudi Arabia as a way of punishing the royal regime if this is proven. We also are told that American intelligence agencies had intercepted communications of Saudi officials discussing a plan to draw Khashoggi back to Saudi Arabia in order to detain him. So they knew something was up, but they didn't want to intervene with their friends in the royal family. We pointed out the deep investments that the Saudi public fund has in American companies, particularly in tech companies here in California. Also on Friday, in discussing this story, I speculated, since they had released Pastor Brunson, that Trump may have traded the freedom of Fethullah Gulen, the Turkish cleric who's holed up at a compound in the Poconos in Pennsylvania. And our listener Fred, who says he lives about 20 minutes away from Gulen's compound in the Poconos, sent me a note saying, that might be the case. And he linked to an article from the Lehigh Valley newspaper, reporting that on October 3rd, there was an incident at the compound of Fethullah Gulen. A man showed up who appeared armed. He was dressed all in black. It led one of the security team at Gulen's compound to fire a warning shot, and the guy fled immediately, could not be located. Now, nobody knows who that is, and anybody can wear black. But Fred asks, is that a warm-up for snatching Gulen? And Glenn Greenwald has a great piece at The Intercept today. I've linked to it in the show file for this podcast. He points out the deep hypocrisy of the Washington Post's editorial page editor, Fred Hyatt. And because Khashoggi was writing columns for the Washington Post, the newspaper is now advocating for him. And Fred Hyatt posted online, "Why do you work for a murderer?" aimed at people who have ties to the Saudi royals. Here's a post under Fred Hyatt's signature. "Will you work for a murderer? That's the question a host of ex-generals, diplomats, and spies may soon face." But Greenwald points out that there are many apologists for the Saudi government, including paid lobbyists like Carter Eskew, who was a top Democratic operative back during the Clinton administration. He continues as a contributing opinion writer, even though his firm gets $150,000 a month to lobby for the Saudi regime. Not only that, we've got the case of Ed Rogers, a longtime Republican operative, currently an opinion writer for the Washington Post. He gets substantial financial rewards for his work as an agent for the Saudi government. Greenwald includes a snapshot of a press release about how the firm that Rogers is a partner in just signed a new $960,000 lobbying deal with the Saudi government. And then there's David Ignatius, who's built his career on cultivating an extremely close relationship to the CIA, and he's been breathlessly updating U.S. readers on the token meaningless public relations gestures that the Saudi regime refer to as reforms. And he also describes a scene here, as reported by the New York Post, a dinner party in Santa Monica at producer Brian Grazer's home, where Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman was just hanging out with Snapchat's CEO, with Vice News's Shane Smith, with Amazon's chief Jeff Bezos, and with Rahm Emanuel's brother, the agent-turned Hollywood mogul Ari Emanuel. Yep, it's a club, and you and I are not members. And finally today, I'm disappointed to see, but I understand why, Senator Elizabeth Warren has taken the bait of the demagogue, and Pocahontas has gone to great lengths to debunk his claims that she doesn't have Native American blood. So Senator Warren got Carlos Bustamante, a renowned geneticist here at Stanford University, to run her DNA. And he said that, yes, there is strong evidence that she has Native American blood 6 to 10 generations ago, and that the error rate is less than 1 in 1,000. Now, this was released along with a powerful video and a website with fact-checking information showing that she never used her Native American heritage to advance her academic career. Now, the reason I'm sorry she's done this is that it only encourages a bully and a demagogue like Trump to find new lies to tell about Elizabeth Warren or anybody else. And so, this is a strong indication that she is running for president in 2020. And part of this is that on July 5th at a rally in Montana, Trump went on a rant about Pocahontas, and he said that he envisions a debate where he challenges her to prove her Native American heritage right there on the debate stage. "And we will say," he said, "I will give you $1 million to your favorite charity, paid for by Trump, if you take the test and it shows you're an Indian." Well, apparently because he spoke in the future tense, he believes that he didn't really make that commitment. And so once again, the slippery and slithering Donald Trump tries to escape from a statement that he made. Thanks for listening to my daily news and comment podcast. You're free to share it far and wide. You'll find it on YouTube. And I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.